This is not a meeting. This is a sitting. And we have a lot of expenses. We are trying, as the months go by, to keep these precious Mondays and the Tuesday sittings without charging any fee, because we really want to make the teachings available as best possible. However, expenses also do go up. And there's both the helping, the support in terms of a donation, and the teaching of generosity of the heart. So if you put the two of those together and decide, you know, how important is this to you, it's a double winning for everybody concerned. 50% does come to the organization, and 50% comes to the teachers, and certainly tonight, most of that will go to Lorna. It just helps us to keep letting it happen. We send out an email every month. Hopefully this coming year I'll do more than once a month. If you want to be on the email list, go to the website and go to Addiction and Recovery, and you'll find a place where you can sign up. So that's also a very good thing to do. Lorna.
Thank you. Good evening, dear ones. My name is Lorna, and I'm also in recovery a long, long time. And I'm delighted to be here, actually. I'm really thrilled. It was very serendipitous that I should call Sandra and wanted to come here. And also, I leave in a few days' time for the rest of December. I'm going into the Forest Refuge, which is the sort of intensive meditation place up in Massachusetts. It's part of I Insight Meditation up there. It's a little starker. And sometimes I get up there and I think, what have I done? You know, signing up for this and then other times it's so delicious and wonderful. And as Steve Armstrong, a meditation teacher, says very often, this is the hardest thing I've ever done and all I ever want to do. So this is, Sandra has asked me if I would address the step 12. And, you know, I could talk for 40 days and 40 nights on step 12. It is so rich. And I have a lot of experience. Wisdom? No. Experience? Yes. I have a lot. So I just want to quickly say something about service. Then I want to talk about a major enlightening spiritual awakening I've had quite recently. So I'm very up to date. The service, I'm on the circuit in AA, which means, I know we don't know what that means in Manhattan, really, but I go around the country speaking at AA conventions. Someone heard me speak once and they got a tape of mine and that was the end of that. But it's a very lonely kind of service, actually. But I always say when I'm out there, I always say, you know, I'm on a diet of a meeting a day. And I have been my entire 37 years. And there's sometimes when I can't get to a meeting. But you know how good Catholics think of themselves as daily communicants? Well, I think of myself as a daily meeting goer. But I can't always do it. I'm abroad or I'm on retreat or doing something like that, or I'm ill. But, you know, I'm in Manhattan, and you can fall out of bed into a meeting in Manhattan. And I just think it's so extraordinary to be a long time sober and suddenly meet someone that's also a long time sober and been going to meetings all the time too, and I've never bumped into them. So we're in an extraordinary circumstances here in New York, and just that, you know, and I've done the things of the detoxes and the 12-stepping and dragging people to meetings and all that stuff, but just the going to the meetings is such a huge service. And how do I know that? Because in my Buddhist practice, I know that it seems like I'm doing nothing, sitting on a cushion, trying to stay in the moment. It seems like I'm doing nothing, but it's, do you know that movie? I mean, it's not really a nice movie, but The Matrix, where they have all those little embryos and they're like powerhouses. They're using them for energy. And that's what it is. And extraordinarily enough, there's more people in hermitages and sitting on retreats and in caves and things at this very moment than there have been at any other time in human history. And don't we need it? We need that power radiating out into the world. And by my sitting in a meeting, I always feel, you know, people say to me, well, and I'm sure you get it too, you're still going to those meetings and you're such a long time sober. And sometimes I just brush it off. I say, well, yes, I like the cookies and, you know, I've got such a lonely life, it's where I go. And I don't get very into it. But you know, by my going to a meeting, I'm putting that energy out into the world that maybe will help some woman in Vermont that's locked in, that can't get to a meeting. And that power, that energy that I put into the basket of sobriety, bless you, supports her. It supports us all. It uplifts us all. And I think I was a long time sober. I was about 14 years sober. And up until that point, if you had said to me, you know, what's the most important thing in your life? I would have shot back immediately, my sobriety. Well, my sobriety is the most important thing in my life. And it's not the case anymore. It's not the most important thing in my life because I don't always like sobriety. I mean, I don't wake up every morning thinking, oh, another glorious day, another day to love my fellow men and make amends and do all that. I'm fickle. I'm deeply shallow. And so I can be moaning and the same as everyone else. But I've never fallen out of love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in love with AA. And if I put that on the front burner of my life, I'm included in it. I'm part of that. And your going into meetings supports me in my fragility when those fragile days come, those fragile moments. So, there's masses to talk about in the 12th step about service, but that's one of the very great services we do. And at 14 years sobriety, it turned from, my sobriety to our common welfare. And is that not the same that happened to the Buddha and Bill Wilson? I mean, after the Buddha got his enlightenment, he thought that they're not going to understand this. No one's going to understand. But he was persuaded to go and teach others. And is it not the same for Bill Wilson? Did he not realize that in order to keep and maintain what he had to give it away. He had to share it with others. So that's my little bit on service. Of course, there's a lot more. So my spiritual awakening, I've had loads, really, loads and loads and loads. And most of mine have been, oh, so that's it. Oh, I see. Oh, I haven't had, you know, the great dynamic spiritual awakening of a St. Paul on the road to Damascus, the Buddha, or Bill Wilson. I haven't had. But I've had some powerful experiences, and most of them at the time haven't felt very powerful. At the time, can I recognize enlightenment? Can I recognize it when it happens to me? I mean, how many of us in this room walked into our first meeting and said, oh, this is just the ticket. This is wonderful. This is really, you know, enhancing my life and these wonderful people. I'm not saying it's you, but most people walk into AA and think, what the hell have I come to? It's over. No more fun, no more people. I'm with this dreary lot. And they go here every day. And the reason they go all the time is because they have brain damage. They can't remember it from one day to the next. Oh, it's the first drink. Oh, it's the first drink. And I'm an auctioneer and I can keep, you know, I'm pretty fast in that area. But I thought, it's not, how long is it going to take me to learn the preamble or the steps? Or I'm going to catch on. I obviously haven't drunk like they've drunk because I don't have the brain damage they have. And, 37 years later, I'm still trying to get it. So in that theme of still trying to get it, and the wonderful thing that Buddhism offers us so clearly is a Buddhist practice offers us the refreshment of our practice, the continual refreshment of the practice. I've never been in this state sober before. I've never had this particular sit before. I've never had this particular experience. And you know, I don't know if any of you go on long retreats, but there's that wonderful thing of, you know, that we sit and we have a wonderful sit, the legs are all right and the body and the mind is still and the birds are chirping outside and it's just and the bell rings and it's and we think, I've got it. And we sit down the next time, all gone. We're redecorating the apartment, we're rehashing, you know, conversations. And what was I going to say? I don't know, something very important, obviously, about... this thing of refreshing, and they say that, you know, there's nothing will ruin the day as a good sit, because then you're grasping for that feeling all the time and throughout the retreat. So I'd like to go in detail about an experience I had and the aftermath of that. And what has happened to me as a result of that. All right. So in April of this year, I was invited to Aspen to do a retreat. It was a gala, a fundraiser retreat. And it was held in this wonderful hotel in Aspen. It was a Saturday night. And it was a lovely, lovely event. And of course, people were drinking and no one was, you know, falling around on the floor or anything. They weren't vomiting on each other. It was very sophisticated. It was very lovely. But I always get a whiplash when I've been around alcohol. It can take days to come, but it's always something about being around, especially if it looks easy. If they're drunk, it doesn't bother me. If they're just drinking nicely and having a sip of wine, it's like, well, why can't you do that? Why can't you? But anyway, so it was a lovely evening. So the following day, there was a blizzard that night, actually, Saturday night. There was a blizzard in Aspen, and Denver Airport was locked down. I couldn't get out. And I was in this very nice hotel, but I was all by myself. So suddenly, having been around all these people, I was suddenly alone, with the day stretching ahead and nothing to do, didn't know. So I took myself off for a walk. And, you know, I had no one to call because in Aspen, it's ski. And because of the first snow, everyone's skiing, whooshing down the slopes. So I was walking through the town and I got to the base of the mountain. And I saw them all. and they're swishing down the slopes and this way and that way, and they're $4,000 worth of shiny gear and their goggles and their helmets and their poles, and they're friendly and they're all having this wonderful, wonderful time with each other, and they're going up in the gondolas on the glistening snow and the scenery. And I stood there and I thought, you see, Lorna, this is something else you've never done. You've never skied. You're such a loser. You know, you've never stuck with anything or gone with anything where you have to be in with other people. You know, your sports are running and swimming, mm-hmm. isolation. And and then it went, you know, you're really hopeless. And you have no friends. You see, here you are, and there's no one to talk to. And you know why there's no one to talk? Because you're not very nice. And you're really kind of a failure. You might have written a couple of books, and you might have done this, that, and the other thing. But really, underneath it, you know that you're no good. Anyway, it went on and on like that. And it felt like I had a thread of a sweater, and it was just unraveling. And when I had about one line of stitches left on the needle, I crawled away from that mountain feeling god awful. And I got to the hotel and I called a friend in New York and I told her, I said, God almighty. And all the time it was happening, I kept on saying to myself, Lorna, stop listening to this voice. Stop it, stop it, stop it. It's a lie, it's a lie. Don't go down this. Don't go down this. But there was a modicum, a seed of truth in it. It wasn't all a total lie. And I called my friend and I said, I told her what happened. And she said, boy, that's alcoholism. And I thought, oh. And you know, for me, it's been, when I first got sober, the emphasis is very, very much on the physical. Like, you know, you get the alcohol out of the house, you read labels, you don't go into bars, you don't, all that sort of stuff. You know, you don't hang around dangerous places. Then it becomes, one gets into clearing up the wreckage of one's past, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Then it comes into the daily practice. And yes, I know that I have a mental, physical, and spiritual disease. But somehow, I think it had somehow come to me that it was just a physical disease. It was just about the liquid now. Because mentally, I've taken care of it. And spiritually, I mean, I've gone away on 3-month retreats, I sit regularly, I'm a daily practitioner, I sponsor, I speak all over the country. I mean, you know, I'm no lightweight. But mentally, I had forgotten, I didn't realize that, see, I'm pointing to my head, I had forgotten that any aspect of the disease can pull one down. And how many times have I heard that pitting up the drink is the end of the slip? The slip starts a long time before, usually, one has one's hand around a drink. And it was such an awakening for me to realize, to come back and realize I have a threefold disease. I need to take care of all those particulars, you know, and on a spiritual life, we can't sit all our lives in meditation. We have to eat, we have to be in community with others. It's a whole package. And I had forgotten that. So that Well, or I don't know whether I'd forgotten it or whether it had just gotten. I suddenly realized my program was very thin. I had been relying on, I don't know what I'd been relying on, but I had a very dynamic sponsor in the beginning, and she moved eventually to Florida, and I kept on using her over the phone. I didn't have anyone to sit down opposite or talk to, or anyone to see me on a daily basis, or anyone that I was running my life through, except my friends. No one that would, you know, that was kind of in charge of me. No one that was going to guide me. And I came back to New York, and I reached out. I had a friend that had changed remarkably, and I asked her what had happened to her. And she told me about this woman that she uses, and I knew this woman, and I called her. And I had a lot of prejudices because she was a member of the Atlantic Group. Some of you might know the Atlantic Group. And there is not one person in New York that has mocked the Atlantic Group more than me. And then I found myself walking across the threshold of the Atlantic Group. And I'm walking in, and they all know me. They know. And I'm asking this woman that's 10 years less sobriety than I have, much, and not much younger, but quite a bit younger than I am, very different, Orthodox Jewish, all that thing. I'm a Jesus freak. And I decided I was going to do what she told me to do. And I have been doing what she told me to do. And it was so incredible, you know, this delicious thing of we can start again, we can start again, we can start again. And I think that's what spiritual awakenings are. And I want to tell you how I feel. Well, when I came in, I don't know, but I've run this past a lot of people with time, and they've sort of supported this. When I came in, and Sandra has far more time than I do, but the big book, it's this sort of feeling that the big book was the instruction manual. That was the instructions for what you do, and it was also written to entice people into the program and how you stay sober and how you work with others and all that. But once you read it, you don't need to keep reading. It was like, once you've set up the DVD player, you don't need to keep reading the instructions every time you want to play a DVD. That's sort of how it was. And this woman looked at me, she said, "No one's ever read the book to you?" And she was like, so sorry for me. So like, oh, no one's ever read you a bedtime story? Oh, and it's not that she's, you know, madly dopey or loving or anything like that. I mean, she's right onto it. And I've done all this work, thought I. You know, I've done it, and I'm redoing it in the classic way. I feel like, you know, I can do a Jackson Pollock, and I can paint like a Picasso, but I can't draw. And going back to the classic basic thing of art and structure, what does it actually say? And so I'm up to, I did a fourth step. This fourth step I did with a friend in, not Maine, what's it called? Not Massachusetts, Michigan, this summer. And I was screaming, doing this fourth step. And she was trying to explain to me how you look at yourself and the harms and da-da-da. I mean, I feel, you know, I'm in well into my 60s, and I feel like I'm trying to learn how to be a ballerina. It's very difficult at this age in my life and this length of sobriety to really go into that again. But this is how I feel. I don't know if you, I'm sure all of you have seen that movie, A Christmas Carol, where he's visited the night before Christmas. He's visited by the ghosts of Christmas past, and Christmas is to come, and Christmas present. And it's a very frightening night for Scrooge. And he wakes up in the morning after this god-awful night, and he runs to the window, and he throws the window up, and he shouts to a little boy, "What day is it?" And the boy says, "Why, it's Christmas Day." And Scrooge says, "I haven't missed it. I haven't missed it. I still have a chance." And that's the way I feel. I feel like I still have a chance. I still have a chance to be compassionate, to be loving, to be kind, to be generous, to see my faults, to help others, to listen to you, to send a card to my sister. You know, I still have a chance. And, you know, in Buddhism, it doesn't, I mean, in Christians, we talk about the soul, but, you know, the soul doesn't know whether it's in the body of a 67-year-old woman or a 7-year-old. It doesn't know that life is the same. It's just this continuing. And that's, you know, one of the tenets of Buddhism. It just keeps rolling on, consequences. And yeah, I could put this off for another lifetime. But why not take care of it now? And that's what's offered to me. You know, I know I'm not realized enough to not come back. I think I have many more lifetimes ahead of me, but I hope I can come back in human form. And I haven't, you know, it would be nice. But but that's sort of my awakening, and that's my the aftermath of my awakening at the moment. And of course, you know, we will see how our experience can benefit others, no matter how far down the scale we're gone. I was speaking in Georgia recently at a women's gathering, AA, and there were three women speakers, and I was one of them, and the other two women, long-time sobriety, both of them, separate stories, had been driving drunk with their daughters in the car, got into an accident, and both of them had killed their daughters. And, you know, no matter how fast down the scale we've gone, how do you get through that? One of them was in a coma for a long time, and when she came out of the coma, she discovered she'd had an accident and the daughter was dead and buried. So it was a long time afterwards, and she was held up for manslaughter charges. She timed it. And then, you know, she had to have masses of help and sponsoring and step work. And hopefully she won't be able to share the experience to help another woman who's killed her child in a drunk driving accident. Probably there will be some, obviously. But she is able to help people buried under the weight of guilt. The guilt. And she took us step by step by step through her process. I mean, she's certainly not through it. You know, it's a lifetime. But that, you know, the awakening, and in my own experience, I cannot tell you how many people with long-term sobriety have come up to me and said, "What did you do? What are you going through? How?" I never read the big book like that either. And so, you know, if you're new into the program, the big book is probably a really integral phenomenal part of your life. And that wasn't my experience. So that's what I have to share tonight on the thing of renewal, the constant renewal. And we're coming into this season of light, and we're welcoming the new light into the world. On December the 21st, it starts changing again, and the new light enters, and that has been celebrated for centuries upon centuries. And so, you know, I'm delighted to be here. I'm delighted to have had the opportunity to speak and express this on the eve of my going into this deep silence. So I just want to thank you deeply for your practice and for your sobriety, or your whatever addiction you're recovering from. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.